Eye on Careers.
In association with laymoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
This is Eye on Careers, the career clinic, charting your next move.
Welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We just heard the story of Thomas Miltz, the managing director for Volkswagen, how he made it to the top of the Volkswagen company. He started out on the garage floor and made it all the top. Lots of people shift industries and move around. If you're thinking around about switching industry, my advice to you would be keep your focus. And I think, you know, you'll see that with most of the success stories that we feature here on Eye on Careers. They have a long time in one industry. Keep that equity. Keep that knowledge base. That is your alpha. That is your competitive advantage as you move into these senior leadership roles. And we also have a new app on Dubai Eye, which you can download, which allows you to listen to live radio and pause it as you will. And you can also contact the presenters live with this new app. So just go on our website and download that. But enough blathering. Let's get to our main guest here, who's Payman Kargar, who is the Middle East Managing Director for Renault. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
Eye on Careers, Executive CV.
Payman Kargar is the Managing Director of Renault Middle East. Business orientated and able to develop a real strategic vision for the future of the company, he is always looking to find new synergies, new business to be developed, new partnerships to be settled. He keeps traveling in the Middle East and in Europe, moving from one place to another. It is his state of mind, moving in order to get the best from all the key players who make up the future business. He is 46 years old and started his career in Renault SAS 20 years ago. He graduated from INSA, Engineer School, and over the past years he has had the opportunity to work in more than 20 countries. In 2012, he was granted the award of Leader of the Year from Renault Nissan's CEO. Behind the businessman, he has the joy of having two children. He is passionate about painting, culture, and languages. He has been painting since he was 8 years old. In 2013, he contributed to the drafting of the book focus on Middle East business development. He speaks English, French, and Farsi, and also has some skills in Spanish and Arabic.
Payman, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
And you know, I've been watching Renault actually on the F1 circuit. So Sebastian Vettel is amazing. Do you get to meet him as part of your job, or?
Well, actually, from time to time, yes. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
That's amazing. What is it that makes him so successful? Because he's not just winning. Like when you look at the numbers, he's crushing the opposition. It's like dominance, complete dominance.
Yeah, that's right. I think the...
You're like, yes, that's right. That's correct. We will crush them. That's excellent. What's the secret there? What's going on?
Well, actually, this is a long history. The engineer worked hard on technology and tried to develop what is really necessary and for this sort of racing. So that's coming from the experience and the time they spend on it.
A lot of people say it's not Sebastian, it's the engineer. It's the guy behind the guy. You know, it's the back office. Is that where the success is found?
Actually, that's a real team. In fact, you have everybody is playing his role in this team, and everybody is passionate about what he's doing. That's making the success of this point.
A lot of executives, you know, when you look back in, you know, the 60s and 70s, say you need to be well-rounded, and we want the well-rounded executive. It was the birth of the general manager. Now when we're in the 21st century, you know, the CEOs I work with are saying, we don't want you to be well-rounded. We want spiky skill sets, you know, like the F1 team. You know, you have a really great driver, not necessarily good at fixing the car, and then you have a really good engineer who, you know, and you put this together, and that creates the team, that creates the alpha, that creates the competitive edge.
That's really the point. In fact, when you look at one guy working with for himself, he can succeed for a few years perhaps, but it's not the key of success. So the key of success is really the team and the manager of this team. If he can develop, get the team to express what they have inside. And this is the point. So
would you advise, you know, for people listening out there who are developing themselves, developing their career, developing their skill sets, should they focus on being a niche specialist, or creating that niche skill set, or should they look at being well-rounded, being more of a general exposure?
There is no rule in this area. It depends really on what you want to do and what you want to be. And the secret is really what is really making pleasure in you. So if you want to be a very specialist on a very narrow area, why not? If you are enjoying, and you know, why not?
So you think, you know, what you're suggesting is, you know, don't follow rules of the road. Follow your heart. Follow your passion. Let that flow. Whatever's flowing in your veins, let that flow out. And don't be captured by some draconian dogmatic management dribble.
Yeah, but when you are copying others, you cannot always succeed as the guy you are copying. But if you are following what you want really, you are putting on the table everything you have to achieve it. So that this is very strong.
But now as you're hiring for your team, though, isn't the world just naturally becoming so segmented? Like, you know, before you had a chief operating officer who could handle IT and HR and da 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 da. But now even your IT, you have to have a chief information officer, a chief technical officer. You have to have a chief digital officer now. It's getting like overly complicated.
Yes, that's clear. And that's why I think one of the key success for a CEO is also to like diversity and to learn diversity. Diversity is not only in the human being, it's also in the technical point of view. And you can feel the diversity and live a diversity without being specialist in one or two areas. And when you are looking at the diversity of the skills and you can learn a little from every area, then you can manage and handle the business gathering all these different skills.
So what's really then the CEO need to specialize in? Because you have all these specialists underneath you.
For me, the CEO has to get three major compositions. One of them is he should be visionary, he should be strategist, and he should be tactical. And you cannot be only one of these. You need really to have a good balance between these three items. And if you can have a good balance on this, then you can succeed. If you are a visionary without a strategy, you are just like a dreamer. You're a dreamer. If you are a strategist, but you are not tactical, you're like a blind in a busy street. So you need really to compose this good balance between these three. And this is one of the key successes of a good CEO.
If you're good at strategy and you're not good at tactics, yeah, you're like a blind person in the middle of the street. So yes, in your mind, for example, you can see how to get to the other side, but tactically you'll get hit by a car.
That's right.
What you're saying?
That's right. Yeah, because when you go out of the steady countries in terms of business and you are in a new country, new frontier, and you're launching a new business, what you need really is to be very tactical. Because it's not because you have defined a strategy and you are following this strategy that you don't have to adapt your daily decision and to be very tactical. So it's very important to be very tactical, mainly when you are launching a new business in a country which is not steady in terms of business environment, for example.
What is, you know, for vision, what do you see as the building blocks to having a successful vision? Because, you know, you can also be a visionary and be strong in tactics and strategy and tactics. But if your vision's off, then, you know, this is a crash course from hell, right? So what do you see as the building blocks for good vision?
Yeah, the visionary is more and more important when you are investing strongly. In fact, for a big business, you are spending a lot of money and a lot of investment for coming years. You need even more to be more visionary. So yeah, of course, you need really to build a vision on the business you are doing. And to do it correctly, it's starting first with knowing your area and the business you are conducting. This is one point. The second point is to be curious about the environment and the competitors. You have always to look at the competitors because the benchmark is coming from the competitors. And then you need to look at the market and the evolution of the market. And in that area, data is not enough. You need data, but you need really to compose the knowledge you have from your skill, from the competitors, from the market, from the evolution, from the data. Then you need really to look at what are the areas your brand can get a major part in the future. And then you are starting to build a vision on your business.
Do you find that it's difficult to shift gears from vision to strategy to tactics, because there are certain times in a business where you have to, what I call swoop and soar. So you're soaring you with the vision at 50,000 feet, but certain times you have to swoop down and you have to, you know, grab those nuts and bolts of the business. Otherwise, all could be lost. You know, yeah. Do you have trouble knowing when to switch gears?
Yeah, this is difficult in general. And one guy is not always excellent in the three areas. So the switching from one to other one is not so easy. That's why a CEO, an intelligent CEO, has to make sure that he's in his management committee, in his team, he has these complementary members in addition of his own point of view in these three areas. So it's not enough just try to switch by himself to from vision to strategy, or from strategy to tactical. It's very important also to compose the team to make sure that you have complementary profiles in the team pushing you in that area. So this is it's going to help you to switch from one to the other one. And if you don't switch yourself, the team can switch and the team can help you to see this correctly.
Do you think that executives should be, you know, investing in their strategic skills? You know, when you look on the far, you know, the extreme case, you have the McKinsey, Bain, BCG, who's read every strategy book and, you know, done all the, you know, and they're well versed in it. You know, but they may not have the vision and tactic pieces. Whereas you look at a lot of the CEOs, and when you start to examine, you know, have you invested in your strategic skills? Majority, probably at least half, haven't.
Yeah, yeah. You need to love this. It's not only a question of training or reading or using consultants from this or that area. You need really to like it. A tennis man, he's good when he likes really what he's doing. So, in addition of reading and having this sort of consultant, you need really to go farther and above that. And this is for me the key point.
This is Peyman Kargar, the Managing Director for Renault Middle East. He's sharing his secrets to the top. And coming up, we'll be talking about some of the biggest challenges he's faced in his career. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We're here with Peyman Kargar, the Managing Director Middle East for Renault. Peyman, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's a star-studded cast here at Renault. We have Sebastian Vettel, who is just crushing on the F1 circuit. I mean, the person closest to him is like miles away. I mean, the amount of points he has, like 150, or I don't even know how many points over his nearest competitor, correct?
Yeah.
And then you're actually working with one of the most legendary CEOs in the automotive industry, you know, for the past century, was Carlos Ghosn, who's turned around Nissan and he's just a legend. I mean, he's literally a Harvard business case study.
That's right. He's a great guy and very brilliant guy, and a very good example for a lot of CEOs.
I had to put a little AC/DC in the background while I said that, because just to give it that extra excitement, which I'm feeling right now. But you know, Carlos is by many metrics one of the greatest CEOs out there, and he by his own personal metrics has given you the accolade of Leader of the Year for 2012. What do you have to go through to be the Leader of the Year by Carlos's metrics? I mean, that must be pretty stringent.
Well, actually, we need to ask him why he did that. No, we had a very big challenge in 2011. I was in charge, after working for the engineering, after sales engineering in Paris, I have been assigned to manage the business in Iran. And in Iran, we made a very good job with the team, and we increased the sales from 30,000 of cars up to 100,000 of cars within 2 years.
Wow.
And it was a great job the team did during these few years. And it was very interesting because it was not only the question of result, it was also the way we worked with our partners there and the way we built the Renault brand presence in this country. Because today on every street, when you ask about Renault, people say quality, and that was really a great achievement the team had, and that was why Carlos Ghosn said, okay, this is great results, and let's say this is the leader of the year. But behind the leader of the year, of course, there's a team, and the way you are working with the team, and the way we are going to achieve this performance.
I read an interesting quote that says the world doesn't reward thought; it rewards action. And you know, so you have to get out there and actually do it. And I guess this was earlier we were talking about the interaction that the leader needs between vision, strategy, and tactics. And
yep.
I think this would probably be a great example of where you did have to get involved in the tactics.
Yes, that's right. In fact, the same. This sort of business, you need absolutely to build a vision. The strategy, it's the way to go to the vision. And in a daily way, you have a lot of surprises, bad and good. So you need
very
really...
politically correct. We have a lot of surprises.
And you need really to make a quick daily decision and make sure that this daily decision is not impacting negatively what you are going to do tomorrow. So, yeah.
What's it like working with Carlos, though? What's he like, you know, as a leader, as a person, the interaction? Of course, you're on the radio, so of course you have to say the nice things. But, you know, just give us some insight.
No, in fact, it's easy to work with him. It's easy because he's a very pragmatical guy, very pragmatical. So you can imagine that if you're coming with a very complicated, unanswerable subject, which is not clear in terms of business point of view, you can say before even putting this point on the table that this is going to be a failure. So it's very easy to work with him. What is very strong with this boss is he's excellent in looking at the situation. He's always saying, make a diagnosis, look at the competitors as a benchmark, and then propose breakthrough. These three items he's pushing.
What was that? Look at the competitors?
Make a diagnosis on your situation, look at the benchmark in competitors, how the competitors are doing, and then come with breakthrough to propose and to implement. So this is one of the way he's pushing his managers to go above and to go forward. And this is very interesting because let's take a few seconds on that. If you look at your business and you have a continuous diagnosis on it to know your weaknesses and your strengths, and if you are looking always at the competitors, not to copy them, but just to identify the area you are weak and the area they are strong in front of this, and then from this, thinking how you can implement a breakthrough and action plan in your area to go on, this is very basic, but this is very strong. And if you apply it, you can get results. So he's a very pragmatical guy, very good on this point of view, and excellent in communication, and a very good captain of team. So how to gather people, how to motivate people, how to get people with him and to go on.
So what metrics are you looking at when you look at your competitors? Is it mostly about the cost position in the automotive industry, or what are some of the key, you know, management dashboard metrics that you really need to keep an eye on?
Yep. It's not always a question of price positioning. I think from time to time, when we want to make it easy, we are saying, oh my God, I have a lot of difficulties to sell this car because it's expensive, or because a lot of cars are existing on the market compared to this one. The difficulty of automotive industry is not only to have the commodities. What I call commodities is some strong points you have to have. I mean, like quality. If you don't have quality, you don't have anything, and one day you are going to fail. So you need to make sure that you have the commodities on your car and your product. This is the first point. The second point is you don't need to copy the competitors and try to do exactly like them. You need really, from time to time, to play the difference. Particularly when you are small and you have big player on the market, you cannot compete with them exactly in the same way. So you need to go to the area you can play the difference, and then you can go on. So the pricing is one point. Of course, if you have comparable products, you need really to be competitive, but the price could be higher than other products if you have something else to propose to the customers.
So what has been your biggest challenge? I guess was it the Iranian business would have been the biggest challenge you face in your career?
Until now, that was a biggest challenge I had, because when I arrived in this position, the question was how to handle this. We were a little lost on the way we had to do, and that was very difficult, because there were a lot of points and difficulties with the partners. There were a lot of difficulties on the market. We had a lot of difficulties technically to produce the cars and to sell them. So a lot of things around, and a complicated situation. So, yeah.
Was there ever those nights when you came home and you just wanted to die, and you were like, "This is horrible. I'm never going to get out of this."
Yeah, yeah. In fact, yes. During the first days and weeks, you are just wondering, and this is human. This is human. You are wondering, Can I succeed? But this is not a doubt you have every time. No, you can have this question from time to time. But the point is, once you have this doubt, if you go to the action, then this is going to work. So the point is not to avoid to have doubt in life. Doubts are useful. The point is not stay with the doubts for a long time. When you have a doubt, you have to react on it. So the point is how to react quickly and correctly based on the doubt you have at one moment on your life.
And I guess from what you were saying is action shook the doubt off. And, one of the things I read was it's harder to think yourself into good behaving than behave yourself into good thinking.
Yes.
So you get out there, you know, don't show it, get back on the field, get the ball down the field. And the doubts eventually go away.
The point is not to get rid of the doubt. It's not just get rid of the doubt. Look at there is a good example. Look at the kids. The kids are never unhappy. They are going always to switch from the bad environment, bad news, to the good news, to enjoy life. So they have a huge ability to switch to the positive. And when the guys, I mean, when you are growing up, when you are becoming old, we are losing this ability. And this ability, we have to maintain it. We have to look at the kids and say, always in my life, I have to switch to the positive point, positive energy. And this is really the point. And for me, the kids are, my two kids, I have two sons, I'm looking at them every day, and they are surprising me every day. And the point is how you can maintain yourself on a positive way and to switch to the positive. Even if the environment is difficult, even you have doubts in life, and this is normal, how to switch to the deposit.
This is Payman Kargar, Managing Director for Renault Middle East. His secrets to the top and how he keeps a positive mind frame on the frame of battle. He's turning around some of the toughest businesses. Stay with us. We'll be right back with the secrets that he's learned working with celebrity CEOs like Carlos Ghosn and interacting with F1 superstars like Sebastian Vettel. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Payman Kargar, the Managing Director for Renault Middle East. Payman, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's pretty exciting chatting with you, and for anyone who's an F1 fan, Payman gets to hang out with Sebastian Vettel from time to time, as well as Carlos Ghosn, who's one of the more legendary automotive CEOs. And I think you were just walking us through, you know, the relationship you feel a CEO has to have between vision, strategy, and tactics, and the ability to switch gears between all three, and the importance of creating that bedrock of knowledge in order to have an accurate vision, which is based on, you know, acquiring data from reports, from the market, based on your own knowledge, because you've been in Renault for 18 years plus now, as well as competitor analysis. And that's really the building blocks. It's not like you're going to go off, do some meditation and have some great vision. It's based on knowledge. And I interestingly now, you know, when you look at historically what we've seen it from a leadership role in the CEO role is they've, you know, 60% have come up through sales, you know, and there's always been this emphasis on identifying upside potential in the market and customer segmentation. But nobody's really going to fail on this when we look at the market today. You know, where you see people dropping the ball is mismanaging their risk, mismanaging the downside. And in fact, for the first time in companies now, you're actually having a risk dialogue take place where executives are, okay, not only present us, you know, where's the market that's underserved or where we can sell more cars, present to us what the two biggest risks to the business are and what we're going to do to institutionalize process against those. Are you seeing these changes as well? Is the fundamental skill sets of a CEO changing in the 21st century?
Yes, clearly yes. In fact, the risk is one item the CEOs should take in account more and more. And also there's a big evolution on the CEO roles in terms of how to handle the business in a very competitive area, particularly when you have big investment in your business. For example, look at the automotive car makers today. You can see more and more competitors trying to cooperate together. Look at Renault with Daimler. We are going to share some platforms, some engine. Renault is selling engine to Mercedes, to Daimler Mercedes. So this is new. This trend is new, and the CEO should be aware of that, because in a big business with a big investment, you can not anymore to be alone and to invest alone, because you have to refresh the product very frequently, and refreshing the product is very, very expensive. So this investment, which is not visible, part of this investment which is not visible by the customer, you can share it even with your competitors. And this is something which is happening. And now in this area, the CEO who play this game intelligently, they are going to succeed. The CEOs who cannot play this game or don't play this game, they are going to stay alone with the companies, and they are going to handle a big investment and are obliged to refresh the products very quickly and then put the company in danger.
So this is similar to what we saw in the IT or computer business, where people first thought that the integrated companies, those that went right from manufacturing through to a complete computer, were going to be the ones to dominate the market. And then you saw the emergence of the disintegrated players like Intel, said we're just going to make processors and become hugely successful. So what you're seeing now, or what your prediction is on the automotive market, is that you'll see the emergence of disintegrated dominance, where a company will just specialize in making a type of engine, and that engine will be in a Mercedes, could be in a Renault, could be wherever, and the car companies will focus on the customer experience.
Yes, this is a good example. In IT, you are totally right, and in automotive, we have already this. In some components, you have the same suppliers
Which components?
In electronic area, you, for example, you have a lot of common parts for different competitors. So today you have one same suppliers producing roughly the same component for Renault, Nissan, Daimler, Peugeot, Citroën. So you can find this more and more. And this can happen because the customer doesn't care which sort of chassis you are putting on the car if the chassis is with a high quality. What the customer is requiring is other things. And then you need to make the difference in this area.
So what are some of the components that are already being universally used?
Tire is a good example. Look at the tire.
Right.
I mean, you have Michelin tire on a lot of competitors, and the customer doesn't care. I mean,
but what about the engine, though? You know, like, for example, the Mustang GT Shelby, you know, could you actually put that in a Renault? Or, you know, people would be like, you know, that's American. You know, that's what makes the car, right? Would it wouldn't go as far as an engine, would it? It would be more like an engine component, maybe.
Yeah, engine is a little specific because the engine is based on the regulation in the countries also. And the price of the fuel, because in Europe, for example, you have to have very competitive engines with a very low level of consumption. So engine is really a question of market. But anyway, you can share engines between competitors for the same markets.
Why does it look like the designs are getting to be the same? Like, you know, the Land Cruiser, the Patrol, the Lexus, they all look the same. The saloon cars are all starting to look the same. Chrysler was copying Bentley, or I don't know who, you know, we put it that way. Maybe it could be the other way around. I hope not. But and even I think the Honda 86 looks exactly the same as one of the Subaru models. I don't know what it is. Like, it's the same car, literally. They just changed the emblem. I don't think you're going to fool anybody there. You know, what's going on?
Yeah, you're totally right. They are all the same, except Renault cars, with an excellent
and
design.
Citroën, and Citroën as well. Renault and Citroën, well, I think, as well. There's a couple that have the guts to break the mold here, but generally, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, yes. The cars, the majority of the cars are roughly similar. You're totally right. And this is the difficulty and the challenge of the style managers, how to do it, to make it different. But again, this is also one area of challenge. And you can find today, anyway, the different shapes, different colors for different customers anyway. And as the customers are looking at a different balance, you have a lot of choices anyway. The only difficulties today in the automotive industry is you have so much capacities in terms of industrial operation and plants, and you have so much models. So the problem and the difficulties for all the car makers today is huge investment, huge capacity, and very high level of competition. So this is the difficulty they are facing today.
But isn't it also that they're locked into this legacy infrastructure, whereas if you're going to really do something dramatic or innovative, you'd have to scrap not only the designs, but, you know, you'd have to build a whole new factory, you'd have to do all this. So they're almost locked into this. And it seems like, from an outsider, that the industry is just now reaching a boiling point where it's about to explode. And my prediction is that, you know, 2015, 2016, you're going to see a huge innovation explosion in the automotive industry. And they're going to look back at probably the last 4 or 5 years as some of the more less exciting years of the automotive industry.
Yeah, you're totally right. When you are building a plant, you're not going to close it easily. This is huge investment. The problem is, in a country, when you have different competitors coming to build a plant, they don't care that the other competitors have plant. They want their own plant and their production. That's why you are, in general, a overcapacity versus the need on the market. So coming back to what we discussed just before in terms of vision and the evolution of the CEO roles, it's this area. For example, let's take the example of Renault and Nissan. Renault and Nissan are combining more and more their plants in different countries. So when Renault has a plant, Renault is proposing its plant to Nissan to produce Nissan cars. And when Nissan has a plant, Nissan is proposing to Renault its plant. So this is an intelligent way to manage this sort of huge investments in a country and not to close it. If you have one product which is not successful, then you can to switch to other products.
This is Peyman Kargar, Managing Director for Renault Middle East, sharing his insights in the automotive industry, his lessons learned from working with celebrity CEOs like Carlos Ghosn and hanging out with F1 stars like Sebastian Vettel. He's going to give his advice for those executives who want to make it to the next rung in the ladder. Over 18 years in Renault, he's sharing his secrets in just a minute, so stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We're here live with Peyman Kargar, the Managing Director for Renault Middle East. Peyman, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's been pretty exciting chatting with you here and looking at some of your approaches to vision, strategy, tactics, the importance of the CEO to cross all three. You've spent 18 years plus in Renault now, worked in different geographies, basically exposed to all different elements of the business, which again is important if you're going to be both for your vision, so you have the knowledge base to create the vision, but also tactically. You've obviously won Leader of the Year by Carlos Ghosn, who's one of the greatest automotive CEOs of all time, will be down in the history. You know, he's won his seat in the history books without question, and I think there's quite a few Harvard business cases on the way he turned around Nissan. So, you know, winning Leader of the Year under his watch is no short order. But we always have to ask our guests, you know, what's their secret to success?
Eye on Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So, Peyman, what's your secret to success?
Perhaps we can sum up it like this. Looking at the people, loving the diversity of the people and the skills, be curious, and looking at the way people are doing that. But doing that, doing what is a pleasure for you, what is important for you, taking time for things which is important for you, and having in mind that life is a movement and you have to follow the movement. Don't stick to something. You have to follow up the movement of the life.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
Well, I love some of those points, and you say curiosity, and that's what I always preach that. You know, where's your intellectual curiosity? You know, you're in a business. Do you have an intellectual curiosity about what makes that operations, what goes into the cost position, what makes the best marketing program, what makes the best brand? And so often you find executives just falling short on that.
Yeah. You need to be curious about not knowing everything. You cannot know everything and learning everything, but to be curious about what's happening around you. You can also use the people around you to make the deep analysis and the deep proposal. But you need to be curious about what's happening around you, because that's only the way you are going to react. So to react, you need to be curious, to listen, to look, and to look at what's happening around you.
We have a caller here. Hello? Hello? Hello, is anyone there?
Yeah, I'm there. Sorry, I'm just...
Okay. You're watching TV?
No, I'm not watching. I'm listening to the radio. How can you say that?
Well, thank you so much for calling Eye on Careers. I understand you had a question for Peyman.
For Peyman?
Yes.
Yes, correct. My question was around, you know, I was making a point earlier about, let me just turn down the volume here. It was actually mentioning something about how to sort of distinguish yourself when you have such a tough competition. And one of the challenges I'm facing today within my industry is to actually motivate the team to deliver on a product that is very challenging to sort of change into numbers in terms of finance. But yet I've got a long-term return aspect to it.
Okay, so it's how do you motivate your team? And I think it also is, do good people need to be motivated? And of course, in your particular situation, idiosyncratic to you is that you don't have an immediate payoff. It's a long-term investment horizon in your business.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And how do you kind of maintain this motivation, though, you know,
sure,
you're banging your head again.
Of course. Okay.
Time,
sure. Know? Sure. Let's Payman. Payman, what do you say motivating the team?
Yeah, I would say a team can be motivated first when it knows where you want to go, why you want to go, and what you are going to get at the end of the day. And so the most important thing with a team is to be able to explain, to build with them the vision, the strategy, as we discussed before, because every member of the team needs to know exactly what is his or her contribution to this performance. And you know that a human being needs recognition. And recognition is not only money. It's money, of course, it's incentive, but it's also the feeling that I'm useful in this society, I'm useful in this company, I'm useful in this team. So for that, the member of the team needs to know where you want to go, why, and how. And then, based on his capacity and skills, he can or she can develop and give the maximum. And when they are giving the maximum and contributing, getting results, this is growing the motivation of the people.
Don't you have to fire underperformers, though? Because I know if you go to New York, they love to fire underperformers. And as you drift east from there, they become less and less likely to do it. Do we have to fire underperformers? Because I think if you don't fire your bad people, your good people leave as well. That's another problem.
This is another problem. Yes, in fact, the case of firing one guy should be absolutely minority, a minimum case. It means that the underperforming people are not always fired, and you don't have to fire every underperforming guy. You need really to understand why the person is underperforming. From time to time, you have a very good person, but if this person is one in one position, he's not performing, but in another position, he can perform. So it is also the management role to make sure that if one guy is underperforming, is it really because he's bad in general, and this is very, very minority case, or the position, the way of doing should be changed. So this is really, we need really to look at the underperformance before the decision of firing one guy.
What is what do you think when you look for someone that you're hiring for your organization, what are the top traits you look for?
The first items, of course, the first point is the commodity. What I call commodity is you need to make sure that the person you are going to recruit needs to know at least a minimum of the skills you need, the environment, and a minimum of experience. So you need really a minimum base to make sure that the commodity is there and you can rely on the person on this area. Then you need to look at the differentiation area you need for your business to be developed. And in that case, in the interview and the person you are looking at, you need really to feel if this person can represent the criteria you are going to search. For example, if you are recruiting one sales man, you need really, in addition of the basic of the sales skills, you need really to understand if this guy can sell everything, and tomorrow he's not going to explain to you that your product is expensive, so sorry, I cannot sell it. So you need really to feel that. So yeah, the first criteria is the skills. Loyalty is for sure one big criteria. You need a loyalty in your team, that's for sure. And then you need positive people working hard to go on.
Payman, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. I think we could have easily done another hour, so hopefully we can have you on again. So thank you so much for coming out to Ion Careers.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
And if you ever wanted to show up with Carlos, that's fine as well. or Sebastian, that's no problem. But congratulations again on your F1 wins. And we look forward to watching your brand blossom here in the Middle East from the sidelines.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of Ion Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, signing off and wishing you luck chasing your dreams.